This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back to Loveline, Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon.
Yeah, somebody in the text line earlier when we were coming out of the last break called it panty dropping music.
That's Chili's, my friend. And also,
big music, not a restaurant.
Yeah, it's up to number three now. I heard Carrington talk about the top five restaurants in America sit down. Number one was Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah, Roadhouse is popular.
It was Olive Garden, but it passed it. Olive Garden's two. Ooh. Applebee's, I think, is four, believe it or not. Or Chili's was three, I think. Then Applebee's and then Buffalo Wild Wings. The text line is asking me a very important question, Drew, from the 816. Has Drew been to Waffle House? I said I don't know, but I'll ask him.
Yeah, I've been to a Waffle House.
Okay.
I like Waffle House is, if I go to a breakfast spot that's not local, if it's like a chain, it's Waffle House.
Weren't you giving me a hard time that I booked like Valentine's Day there?
I don't know if it was I think I gave you a hard time because there's better places to go on Valentine's Day than a Waffle House.
I can't
think
of one.
My question to you, Drew, you've been to a Waffle House.
Correct.
What time of day did you go to this Waffle House? Because I think that that's an important
distinction.
So I haven't been only one time. I've been multiple times. I would say I've been there anytime from a traditional 8:30 breakfast to 1 a.m.
1 a.m. or 2 a.m.
That's when you need to go to Waffle House.
I've been at both times.
I'm sorry. If you're going to Waffle House, it needs to be between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m. Because that is when Waffle House is at its Waffle House-ist.
Did you know Gus Malzahn used to go after every game? Yeah. At Auburn, he went to Waffle House head for every game. That was his staple. Then, he would always be at Waffle House.
Well, and Scott Frost, head coach at Troy, head basketball coach at Troy, recruits players that only go to Waffle House.
Should.
Think it's a thing. That was a story that came out during the tournament.
They have their own album.
Who does?
Waffle House. They've got their own album.
Yes, yeah.
And they have a jukebox and their song. They have a theme song. They've got everything.
You've had me play the song before, yes.
One of the strangest moments of my life, I was at a Waffle House. It was 11:30 midnight, and we're eating, and I watched as outside in the parking lot of said Waffle House, I watched a group of people steal the back tires off of a Honda Civic. I am not making that up. I watched them NASCAR pit crew, four people converge on this Honda Civic, and in a matter of probably a minute to a minute and 15 seconds, they jacked the back of the car up, rolled it off of there, and took these and just left, just threw it in the back of an old humding pickup, tooled off down the road.
You could have said Valentine's Day, Logan.
That was one of the stranger ones I've ever seen.
I don't think Valentine's Day would be on a top 20 of my places to go on Valentine's Day. A Waffle House.
Well, you're in the love stuff now.
I don't think
you're going
that'll
through
ever
a
be that
you're
way.
Going through a love stuff phase. You haven't been married that long. You'll probably get divorced soon. But was it five? You ain't hit 5 years, have you?
Not 5 years. I've known.
Does she like tigers?
We've known each other. She does like tigers. We've known each other for more than 5 years. We've known each other for almost 8 years now.
How long have you been married?
I've been married for a little over three.
I've been married for close to 2 years. My wife and I have known each other for almost 11 years.
You guys are on the fast track to divorce.
Logan, watch out because Bink is notorious for these comments. He thinks that everybody's going to get divorced who's newly
married. More than half the country is.
He thinks Rob is going to get divorced, and he got married last year.
Yep. I've been to a lot of weddings and a lot of divorce parties.
Divorce parties?
Yeah, divorce parties. I
had one. Hosting divorce parties?
I've had one.
That's what I'm saying.
It was called the Bitches Gone Party. It was fantastic. We had a kegger, burgers, Logan.
Are you even able to say that? Should I dump it? Because I don't even know in that context. I think that context.
You can say the B word.
Yeah, in that context, I don't think so.
Can you? Because then you just called it the B word.
Well, I kind of, Drew. I did.
It.
I went ahead and I don't want to get in trouble, nor do I want you to get in trouble.
I've been listening to your show. You guys cuss from time to time.
I know, but context is everything, and I don't know if this is the context that is allowed. And anyways, to quickly jump to another topic. It just sounds like you're ready to rant today. Like, there have been moments on this show where you have ranted. You and I have worked together.
Yeah.
Where you've gone on rants when you've been doing stuff with Gold. It's happened when you've been co-hosting with Cody. It's happened now Logan's hosting, and you're getting the full Jay Binkley experience here, Logan.
Hey, I like it. Somebody just asked me. Somebody just said, was that at the Waffle House in St. Joe? No, it was the Waffle House on Front Street right here in Kansas City.
Hell yeah.
Oh, is this recently?
I was in high school.
Logan's a real dude, man. Logan's real dude. And so are you, Drew, because you've been there too. I appreciate both of you for that.
Somebody else just said you don't go to Waffle House, you end up at Waffle House. Yeah,
you go.
Fair. Like going through the Taco Bell drive-thru at 2 a.m. after you leave the bars. You just end up at the Taco Bell.
We used to walk through it in college. We were responsible.
What,
Taco Bell? We didn't drive through it. We walked through it. Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't drink, so I was I was typically the designated driver.
Oh, you had been my friend
the entire time through college.
Logan, what are you doing tonight, buddy?
All of a sudden, you're just going to get an influx of text messages on Friday and Saturday nights now from Bank. Hey, what are you doing tonight?
Yeah.
Nothing. You want to be my designated driver? Jeez.
Oh, jeez. Somebody, what's the leading cause of divorce? Marriage.
Wedding cake. No.
A couple people in the text line throwing that joke out there. It's a good one.
I mean, in fairness, that's how it goes. You know?
Marriage, three-ring circus, engagement ring, wedding ring. Suffering, Drew.
Get your negativity out of here. You know, like I'm sure Logan is happily married. We enjoy. All right. Anyways, let's move on to what you teased before the break. Favorite Chiefs draft pick. Who do you think is going to start week one?
First of all, we're a week away from where the draft was in Green Bay. The great job by them. They had over 600,000 people there. There was 200,000 people, Logan, their first night. They only have 105,000 in the whole town, right?
Yeah.
They had double the population the first night of the draft. It just shows you the draft is blowing up. It's going to be in D.C. They're expecting over a million people.
What'd you call it? One of the top five sporting events?
I'd say top three. If not, I don't want to really get into this.
I was going to say, we're not going to do that. But
honestly, there's not many bigger. I know the text line will come up. Blah, 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 this. Yeah. No, it's not the NFL draft. Stop.
So out of all the Chiefs draft picks, I think there's a couple who realistically can start week one. Obviously, you know, you're not looking at Breshard Smith as good as he might be, as contributive as he may end up. He ain't going to start week one unless there's a bevy of injuries. There's probably a list of
sign Nick Chubb.
There's probably a list of 3 to 4 guys. I don't think they should sign Nick Chubb. Well, who are they going to get rid of, Bink?
Kareem Hunt.
They shouldn't have signed him in the first place. But
I would take Chubb over Hunt. I like Hunt a lot, but I'd take Chubb over Hunt.
I think everybody would, but why would they sign Kareem Hunt before the draft and then just cut him a couple weeks after the draft because they want Nick Chubb?
Because football is business, and you constantly have to evolve and get better.
I don't know. But is there a pick in your guys' mind that, like you teased, Bink, is going to start week one? If it were me, I think Noah Williams has the best shot. Yeah. Josh Simmons, obviously, you have to consider if he's healthy. Jalen Royals, is he going to start? Probably not.
No, there's no way in hell. Like, I don't see Royals. I mean, it would take a lot to start over.
It would take some
interest.
Not as an outside threat. I think that Jalen Royals has the best chance to start among these rookies as a special team, as a specialist.
Okay. Yes, agreed.
That's what I see. I see him having a unique possibility to be a guy that can make something happen in the return game. He's got plenty of experience in that, both in the kick return and punt return game. The problem with it is there's a lot of guys on this roster and even inside this rookie class that I think can be competent and even great return men. Brashard, you know, Smith has experience with that dating back to his days as a receiver and as a running back.
Noah Williams
has experience as a returner. I think Noah Williams is a guy that you really need to focus on him as an outside corner, because I want to see Trent McDuffie be able to slide back into the slot. He's an excellent outside corner, but he is the best slot corner in football.
I think Fulton's going to help that.
I don't disagree. Fulton is just, he's been hit or miss throughout his career. He's got some consistency issues, excuse me. And Williams is a third round pick, I think, is an interesting thought. He led FBS in picks last year. He's got great size. He's good frame. I don't think you'll see Josh Simmons play this year. I'm not entirely a guy that you could see hitting the field before anybody else with any kind of consistency, but it's going to have to be in the return game, and he's going to have to beat out some other rookies.
He said it several times, like, we want to get a guy that can also return, because now the kickoff return comes to 35, so more teams are going to be kicking it to where it can be returning, because you don't want a 30-yard line, you're fine with. Just kick it through the end zone, 30 yard. But
yeah, you don't need a guy that's just going to catch it in the end zone and drop.
One interception return, one kickoff return, two fumble returns. The guy's a ball hawk, and that's something you want. That's a guy I can actually see challenged to start. Rare people say, well, Simmons, my favorite pick. I don't know about you, Logan, but most people have asked who your favorite pick is. That doesn't come right up.
Josh Simmons?
Does not, which is weird for first-round pick.
It is, because it's a high-risk, high-reward pick, right? First of all, offensive line isn't sexy, right? In the first round, and as good as the Chiefs have been and as good as their skill positions have been, there's always going to be people within the fan base that want a skill position guy in the first round, right? I don't think, as good a talent as he is, and while I think he could do some good things in Chicago, I didn't think Luther Burden made sense for the Chiefs offense. But the number of people who were sitting there after the Chiefs trade back to 32 and Luther Burden's still there and the Chiefs pass, there's going to be people that are like, why didn't they take Luther Burden? I don't know, because you already have Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Rashee Rice.
For this year.
I understand. But there's going to be wide receivers in next year's draft and the year after that and the year after that that are going to be able to do those things. And getting a guy like Jalen Royals in the mid to late rounds, who, if not for an injury that limited him to 8 games this year, might have gotten to the century mark in receptions and had back-to-back 90-plus catch, 1,000-yard seasons. I understand it's Utah State, but he is a tremendously talented guy. He runs a sub-4.40. That's a great pick, a great value in that spot, and he's a good number 4 receiver for this Chiefs team. You still have Juju Smith-Schuster and other guys. You're fine there. So, yes, there was something to be said for it wasn't a sexy pick, and he's got the injury issue, and that's always going to make people nervous. But if he hits, you're not going to have to worry about who's blocking Patrick Mahomes' blindside until the day 15 decides to hang up his jersey and get his gold jacket in Canton.
See, pick at the end of first round is actually interesting to me, because there's guys that could be a game changer for this team. You rarely see that at the end of first round. NFL GMs typically have 12 to 17 guys they give first round grades to. This year, V just said, 12 to 13 guys with a first round grade. And a couple of years ago is more than that, because McDuffie, they had a first-round grade on, started to slide in the 20s. They're like, hey, need to make a move and go get this guy, because we had a first-round grade on Trent McDuffie, and they did. That's what they went and did. But when you're sitting here, you could have a game-changing type player. Obviously, Josh Simmons can be that guy. A little more work. Not a huge fan of the pick. Burden, I believe, the quality of talent that Burden is, you're not going to see that quality of talent that was still available at the end of the first round like they had. He's the best slot receiver in this draft. We talked about that when we did mocks. Like, if Burden's still there, we make the choice. Wanted Harmon and these other defensive guys, to be honest with you. But if that was the consternation, like if Burden was still there, we would think about it. We just have to go with that pick.
I think they view him in the same light as Rashee, though, because Rashee's very good out of the slot. And like in terms of what they do.
And he could muddy things up like Kelsey.
I think they feel like they've already got that sort of a player in Rashee Rice, where if they were to get another guy in the first round, maybe it's somebody who's more of an outside guy, big, tall, fast, like not, because Xavier Worthy's more of an outside guy, but he's not smaller height-wise even anyways. Like Jaden Higgins would have been a guy maybe that fit what the Chiefs, quote unquote, need at wide receiver, maybe a little bit more, or could utilize a little bit more, because they already got Rashee.
Yeah, I think Worthy's kind of misunderstood. I think that 4-2-1 time at the combine didn't help for the kind of player he is, because everybody's looking at, oh, the Chiefs are going for the combine hero. Xavier Worthy's a stud. He led Texas in receptions and yards for three straight years.
Yeah.
In two of those 3 years, he actually led him in touchdowns. He's more than a vertical route, more than nine route. He could do a lot of things. People saw his toughness last year. It took him a while to develop. I didn't think the pressure was on him right away because of Hollywood Brown being here. And we actually mocked him back in September, the Chiefs, a year ago, but then backed off that once they signed Hollywood Brown. Same guy.
Right.
Same type of guy. But all of a sudden, with injuries to Hollywood and Rashee, it was like, step up, rookie.
Yeah,
like that pressure then went on the first-round pick.
Thrown way too much into a role he wasn't quite prepared for.
Yeah, and he wasn't at the beginning of the year. You remember time and space when he'd be on the sidelines and couldn't quite get both feet in. He had those kind of issues. But he got better and better and better when the spotlight was on him. And I think there's been pressure on Rice, clearly. And I think there's pressure on Sky Moore, to be honest with you. Now, Jalen Royals didn't have any because he's behind all these guys. Mm-hmm. His biggest competition will be Juju in training camp.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to, just briefly, the Noah Williams pick, I like Noah Williams. I'm intrigued by his size and his fit in this offense. For Noah Williams, I think his biggest learning curve is going to be man versus zone coverage. Because when he was at Cal likes to utilize zone coverage, right? He was able to sit down, read receivers, read the quarterback's eyes, and make plays on the football. This Chiefs team, at least last year, was one of the NFL's leaders in man-to-man coverage, right? I mean, Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson played man coverage over half the time, which is something he was not really accustomed to. I think Cal ran zone coverage like 70% of their snaps last year.
Which is interesting because it's a defensive back as their head coach.
Right.
Like Wilcox, that's where he cut his teeth. He's also been a defensive coordinator at Tennessee, Wisconsin, USC, you name it. So he's cut his teeth on defense.
A lot of zone coverage for Noah Williams during his time with the Cal Golden Bears. So having to transition from that to an offense like Steve Spagnuolo, which is a little bit more 50-50 and actually leans more towards man coverage, where he's going to have to be one-on-one with some really talented
he
receivers
did do some
throughout
press
the
man
year.
At Cal. Press man and cover three was kind of where he looked. The funny thing is these experts that say we can't tackle. Well, Dane Brugler, I respect like his work on the draft. Like his beast that he puts out, he was going on and on about what a great tackler Noah Williams was. We brought his coach on, Kevin Wilcox. He was talking about what a great tackler. He sets the edge. Now, he's not a guy that has any sacks. He's got everything else, but it's a guy in Spag system I could see doing it.
He's a DB.
No team has blitzed more from the secondary than Spag's teams.
I know, but I think that's a Trent McDuffie thing.
You
know,
that's a McDuffie. That's Jaden Hicks.
He's
that's
good at that.
Now,
Shamari Connor. Yeah.
Shamari Connor. Justin Reed prior to that. Tyrann Mathieu. Right. It's those safeties they bring down in the box and slot corners. You don't typically see a lot from the outside corners coming down into the box and making a play on the football. So somebody just said something about putting Noah Williams at safety to replace Justin Reed. That's not what's going to happen.
That's what Jaden Hicks is for.
Jaden Hicks is going to replace Justin Reed. He'll be the starter at strong safety from day one this year. That's why they drafted him out of Washington State.
I think they see a size over 6 foot and they think, natural safety, but he's more of a. And Shamari Connor could play more safety down instead of nickel. He can kind of move back into his more acclimated role playing safety. And by the way, he did lead Virginia Tech in sacks 1 year that he was there, Shamari Connor.
You guys,
he does blitz the quarterback extremely well.
Yeah, totally. You guys want to get to a trash of the day?
Let's do it.
Two trash of the day.
Trash of the day.
All right, so these challenges have been going on for a while, a variety of different things. You guys mentioned the Tide Pod challenge. I did not partake in that, by the way.
Kramer did.
Did he really?
I think. I used to call him Tide Pod.
Anyways, so there's a lot of challenges that have happened over, I don't know, the last, it seems like, 5 years or so. Five to 7 years. Anyways, there's another one. I don't know if anybody has heard of this, you guys have. Yeah. The Kool-Aid Man Challenge. There, New York police are looking for a group of teens responsible for conducting the Kool-Aid Challenge on a fence. The challenge is where a group of teens charge through a homeowner's fence and then run away. So there's video of this. You can find it on Twitter or on social media in some way, shape, or form. Literally, home fence line. A group of people just sprint through it, knock the whole fence down, all of it, and then get up and then run away.
I've heard this trend. It's a stupid trend. Why do kids need trends? I'm just curious about that. Like, who thought this was a good idea? Who thought this was a good idea?
They want to become popular. I know. I agree. It's dumb.
You obviously put a lot of blame on the kids. But there's also a tremendous amount of blame that needs to be put on the fact that they do this because people watch it. Because there's legitimately people that find this sort of crap entertaining, right? Like people that complain about reality TV.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate reality TV and all the freaking Kardashians and this and that. Yeah. Well, it's obviously on your television set for a reason because millions and millions of people are watching Snooki get into an argument with somebody on Jersey Shore. And I hate that I know that those exist. I hate that I know that there's a person out there whose name is Snooki. All right? Yes, these kids are being dumb. They're being dumb kids. But the fact that it ends up on social media and this post from the Daily Loud has 5.1 million views.
That's right.
Why else do you they're not running through freaking fences because
they think
it's funny.
Fences are expensive. Very expensive to do a fence. That's why, I mean, this is costing people money.
Yes, absolutely it's costing people money. And it's ridiculous. And these trends just get more and more dumb. Like when I was in high school, it kind of seemed like these were starting. Like my junior year, it was like the ice bucket, like the original ALS ice bucket challenge, right?
For a great cause.
And then the next year, yeah, I did it too. Then the next year it was that cinnamon challenge where you would just take like a spoonful of cinnamon, raw cinnamon, and put it in your mouth and try to eat it, and people would lose their minds. And then there was like the saltine cracker, that's always been a good one. And then it got ridiculous. Then you started seeing the Tide Pod challenges. There was that stupid one where people would put crates in like the shape of a triangle and try to climb it. The number of broken arms, broken legs, concussions,
and at least that only hurt themselves and not someone's fence.
Exactly, right? It was more self-inflicted. And
which I'm good with. If someone wants to break their arm or whatever being stupid, go ahead. Break your arm. But don't hurt someone's fence.
There was one that was like ice cream related a few years ago where people were like going into convenience stores and like eating ice cream and then putting it back or something. Like it reaches a point where
certain levels of just ridiculousness.
It's become stupid. Yeah, somebody just said, why can't we just go back to TPing a house?
We used to do that. Yes, that was fun. That's when kids are being kids.
Harmless. You are not causing.
Well, COVID taught us not to waste toilet paper.
Yeah, you're not causing permanent destructive damage to people. I mean, it's become completely and utterly asinine. Oh.
Drew, you seem the type to do stuff like this.
No, absolutely not. I was the furthest thing from this. I wanted no part in any of it.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
I have to think about that. I can't just
run with scissors
off the cuff. No, I've done worse things than that or crazier things than that. I'd have to think about it.
I climbed a cell phone tower one time.
No, that's pretty crazy.
Yep, we had an AT&T tower outside my hometown.
Have you ever climbed these out front? The radio tower?
No, I haven't climbed the radio tower, no.
There's a bunch of birds that sit on them. They crap all over your car, by the way. You don't park your car right underneath them because the birds, I'm not kidding. We've been with stuff and producers, stuff that'll walk out and the car is covered in bird crap. Have you had bird crap yet, Drew?
I mean, I've had bird poop on my car, yeah, but not to that
extent. I got crapped on coming into the building, and they say it's good luck. They say it's good luck.
I've never happened to myself, no.
It's happened to me, and they say it's good luck.
The car,
so I roll with it.
You just walk in with some bird poop on your
arm? I have, yes. There's birds everywhere, man.
All right.
Radio stations accumulate birds.
Has there anybody that's lived as complete of a life as you have, Banks, at this point? Because it sounds like you've done a whole hell of a lot of good stuff
that's called parking your car and walking in. Birds are a problem.
I once saw a bird fly into a car.
They've flown into this window.
Are you one of the people, Bink, that think birds are not?
Birds aren't real.
Aren't real?
No, they're totally real, but they're annoying.
Conspiracy theorists. Yeah, that's actually. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Bink. That's an organization that actually exists. It's called Birds Aren't Real. They think that birds are robots created by governments, and that the reason why they sit on telephone wires, and you know, is so that they can recharge.
And bats. I remember when a bat got in the press box and Vern like hit the floor, man, because a bird was flying around the Kauffman Stadium press box. Anyway, coming up next, Drew, the favorite segment of myself, the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Not the Bengals Half Hour, the Chiefs Red Half Hour next.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Welcome back, 96.5, The Fan, home of the Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City Royals, Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon. This is Drew's favorite segment, the Chiefs Red Half Hour.
When I wake up in the morning, I look forward to this half hour right here.
Is that the Bengals? They have the Bengals orange half hour in Cincinnati.
I don't know. Pink. I don't listen to Cincinnati radio because I'm.
I wouldn't either. I
do Kansas City radio. I enjoy Kansas City weather.
I'm not sure they do because I think a Super Bowl victory might be required in order to get yourself half hour.
I think you're right.
I mean, maybe.
Sorry, Drew.
The Trey Hendrickson half hour. How mad is he today?
I think things are more optimistic, actually, based on a more recent report.
Needs to pay him. How can you be optimistic when you see T. Higgins, Jamar Chase get that contract? But regardless, this is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Phase two begins today for the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, the Super Bowl, the way they keep going, it condenses this offseason. I mean, you're already in phase two at this point. It just seems like they were in the Super Bowl not long ago. We've had the combine. We've had the draft. It's boom. It's go time for the Chiefs. And then next week, be sitting there, and we'll have the schedule release for the Kansas City Chiefs.
And it's only going to get worse as Roger Goodell begins to inquire more and more and more about the possibility of an 18-game regular season, which would add another week to the season because you have to have a second bye week in order to do that.
It's why the records don't matter as much.
Right.
We care about daily fantasy.
Yes, which is, again, in doing that, you'd have to push the Super Bowl back at least another week, which, in all honesty, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You push the Super Bowl back a week. That would make the following Monday a national holiday, President's Day. So everybody would have that Monday, or most people, I should say, would have that Monday off. So that would kind of be a welcome sight for folks. But again, condenses the NFL season down even more, another week or two.
They could start it earlier, too, if they wanted to.
They could. And then you're dealing with mid to late August football, which could get real hot real fast.
Well, preseason, they're going to go from three games down to two games and not even matter on
or
that.
Or just get rid of it.
But the schedule release has become an animal on itself, and you might think it's always been a big deal, but it hasn't been. I remember talking to powers to be into having a schedule release show back in like 13 or 14, 2013, 14, after the Royals game. So after Vern was done, whatever, we came on, and we talked about the Chiefs schedule. It was no big deal. People just got on their phones. Who are you playing? When are you playing them? It wasn't that big a deal, but now it's huge. Because now the morning shows, Fox, CBS, you know, they'll announce a game on that. Then you'll start seeing the international. We've seen international teams that are playing internationally, but not who they're playing.
Right.
Which you'll start seeing that on May 14th. But I do like the schedule release. And the NFL has found a way to captivate us every damn month of the year.
Every day of the year. I mean, Roger Goodell, for all of his faults in other aspects, I know there's a lot of people that don't like him for a variety of reasons. The man is a marketing genius. He has found so many ways to keep the NFL in the front of the brain of Americans every single day of the year.
He doesn't care who and what you are. The NBA dominated Christmas, right? He says, nah, we want to. And they did. It's NBA Day. Oh, they took it over. Having the season start on Thursday night has been genius for them to get last year's Super Bowl champions. Baseball starts their season a lot of times overseas at 6 o'clock in the morning and no one gives a damn. I mean, they've found a way to captivate that. They start having fans be able to go to the combine. And certainly the draft has become its own animal since they're moving this thing around. But they have found a way to make every month relevant. And, of course, schedule release. People will be on their phones all day. They'll be refreshing, searching, all right, who's piecing? Because people will piece it together. Who the Chiefs are playing in week 5, week 6. It'll all start to come out. But it's huge. But we know the Chiefs have some big-time games next year.
Man, they have got some absolute dogs on their schedule, both, you know, road games, away games. You look at what the Chiefs have as of now, right, on their schedule. They got to play the six games within their division. You've got the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Raiders, all three of whom I think have improved even more from where they were a year ago. The Raiders, obviously, I don't know what goes on with them, but you've brought in a brand new head coach in Pete Carroll, a proven winner. That's going to make you better already.
You're looking at three college national champions just from the division coaches.
Yes, absolutely. And a guy that's won a Super Bowl in Pete Carroll. you bring a guy like Geno Smith over, who is much more proven than either Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell.
What the NFL and passing efficiency 2 years ago.
And you bring in a guy like Ashton Jeanty to take some of the pressure off of Geno. You've really done very, very well for yourself in this offseason. The Broncos did a great job last year. They surprised everybody. You know, you've got your guy in Bo Nix, and now you surround him with outside pieces. Your secondary, your defense got stronger via the draft. And then the Chargers, who, led by Jim Harbaugh, a playoff team a year ago, still not entirely convinced of what they've got going on at wide receiver outside of Ladd McConkey. But we know what Jim Harbaugh wants to do first and foremost, and that's establish the run. And they didn't do that with a great amount of effectiveness last year, right? They had J.K. Dobbins, and they were trying, you know, Gus Edwards, and they were throwing guys in and out of there with the injury issues.
But now it's Najee in free agency, Najee and they draft Amarian Hampton, yes, which I think was actually better than Jeanty.
Oh, God, that pissed me off, man. I was begging for months, man. I watched.
I know you wanted him, man. We did our station picks, and you were the only one, but you had Hampton.
I did. I loved Amarion Hampton. I watched film on him, and then I watched him at the combine. Just a Saquon Barkley body type, and I thought that was a home run there. Yeah, now you've got two bell cow caliber backs in Najee Harris, who's led the NFL in carries over the last 4 or 5 seasons since he came into the league, on top of a great rookie running back in Amarion Hampton. The division got better, and that's a scary thing if you're the Kansas City Chiefs. You look outside of that, you've got matchups against the Commanders. You've got matchups against the Eagles and the Bills. This is a strong schedule for them. Fortunately for them, a lot of these games that they have against tough opponents from last year are at home. They've got 10 games scheduled this year against teams that were 500 or better a year ago, above 500 a year ago. 7 of those 10, they've got at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. They only have to go on the road to play 3 teams who had winning records
a year
ago.
Which Mahomes has just one loss in the division on the road. And Kevin Potter from NFL.com looked at 10 best games in the NFL next year. 3 of them were the Chiefs, by the way. Which Sharp Football looks at who had the toughest schedule from last year. I never look at that stuff because it doesn't matter, because teams are good when you don't expect them to be, and bad when you don't expect them to be either. But they have the number one game being the Chiefs and Bills. That's become just a must-watch game, even though it doesn't really matter, the regular season between the Chiefs and Bills. Here in Kansas City, you know that joke. Philly at KC, big-time game. You've seen them in 2 Super Bowls since Super Bowl 57. This will be a fun game. And then, of course, you also have the Ravens at the Chiefs as well. And that's of many games. But I'm with you, though. I look at this division, think, all right, you got 2 games each in this division. I think that last year's 9th straight for the Chiefs winning the AFC West, which are 2 away from the record, and the Patriots with 11 straight division titles. I look at last year's most impressive, just because you had 3 teams make the postseason from the AFC West.
And they still won it.
And they're
going to
be better
away
and better. And the quality of head coaches you have now, because the Raiders are actually legitimate now. Pete Carroll, he's brought legitimacy. 2 national titles in college, Super Bowl championship, almost a 2nd Super Bowl championship, but Russell Wilson threw that pick at the 1-yard line. But it's kind of his fault, too, because he should have ran the ball at that point. But regardless, he went the 2, and Tom Brady got an extra ring because of that nonsense, and Pete Carroll. But winning head coaches that have won Super Bowls and college football national titles, even though Harbaugh hadn't won the Super Bowl, he's been the one, and he's won a college football, and he's won everywhere he's gone.
Yeah.
He's been a winner. But this division is absolutely loaded. So I know that they put here on NFL.com, the Ravens and Bills. Hey, I think the Broncos, I think the Chargers and Chiefs, I think these games, divisional games, will be extremely important.
Man, this is going to be a fascinating year for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know that it's already happening, right? You're already seeing people. It's the typical off-season, you know, circle of life. Time is a construct where people are taking the Chargers to win the AFC West already again this year, which surprises nobody. Until the day that I see the Kansas City Chiefs lose the AFC West, until that day happens, I'm going to take the Chiefs to win the division.
Well, you're from Missouri. Show me state. Show me.
Yeah.
Show me you can do it.
Somebody's got to prove that it can be done. Somebody's got to prove that Patrick Mahomes can't lead his team to an AFC West division title. Because up to this point in his career, he's a perfect 7-for-7. Somebody's got to prove that it can be done. And nobody's done that yet. Nobody's come close.
But everybody predicts the downfall happening, and he's just now getting into his prime. And as I remind people, Steve Young had a Hall of Fame career. he was basically all done in his 30s.
Yeah.
Like Mahomes hadn't even hit that. He's 29, turned 30 this football season. But regardless, Steve Young built a Hall of Fame career only in his 30s. He's only going to get better.
Right? Your physical talents may begin to diminish. And I've seen some people saying, you know, what is the Chiefs offense look like? What does Patrick Mahomes, look like when his athletic abilities begin to fall away a little bit? He doesn't become as talented at getting away from pressure or extending plays with his feet and doing those sort of magician-like things that he does. He's talented enough a player and smart enough a player. He's so much a student of the game that he can adjust to whatever it requires to win a football game. If that means he's got to stand in the pocket and be, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Peyton Manning of past eras, then he can do that. And I am under no expectation whatsoever that we're going to begin to see the downfall of Patrick Mahomes at any point in the very near future. As long as 15 is still at quarterback, Andy Reid, Big Red's leading the charge, and Brett Veach is in the front office, this Chiefs team should be the favorite to win the AFC West and should be among the favorite or top two or three favorites to win the AFC and win a Super Bowl every single year, same way that the Patriots with Brady and Belichick were for years and years.
And I look at it, the Chargers are definitely the sexy pick every year. I've seen more and more Broncos lately, which I think the Broncos is a better team right now than the Chargers, to be honest with you.
It's because people aren't tipping the Justin Herbert Kool-Aid anymore.
No, and Justin Herbert's had to get used to new head coaches, and I do think this is the right head coach for Justin Herbert. I don't think they've supplied him with a lot of talent at wide receiver, and they should. They're definitely making it easier as far as turning around and handing the ball off, because that's what Harbaugh wants to do, but at least it's a quarterback, a former NFL quarterback as his head coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my
instead of a one-year defensive coordinator in Daly.
My biggest reasoning behind the Broncos being that team that I believe is the second best in the division, and I've seen some people in the text line who agree, their defense is elite. Front four, linebackers, and their secondary is unbelievable. I mean, having Pat Surtain the second is going to put you in the upper echelon of the league to begin with, but they are so good and they are so deep, and they even drafted defense in this draft. Aaron. Yeah, I mean, they really went after
the
more
best
guys.
First round of the teams in the division.
Yeah,
they went a guy that can actually help stopping Mahomes and Jahdae Barron.
Yes, absolutely. And then they went after some edge rushers and some defensive line guys later on in the draft as well. This is a Broncos team that is great because they're deep. I mean, they have their defensive line led the league in sacks last year using a complete like by committee style of approach. They didn't have two guys on the edge that were competing for a 20 sack season. They had a guy with 12 sacks, a guy with 10 sacks, a guy with 14 sacks, a guy with 9 sacks, a guy with 12 sacks, right? It was this group effort that came together to make things happen. And I think that's what makes them special, is the Broncos defensively are going to keep them in games. And Bo Nix was incredibly impressive last year, if not for the historic season that Jaden Daniels had. Bo Nix wins the Rookie of the Year going away last season. And he had probably the third best quarterback rookie year we've seen in the last 5 years. It just happened that he was falling behind the guy who has the best quarterback rookie season maybe ever in Jaden Daniels. So he's only going to get better.
Up that offensive line.
Yes. He's just going to improve. And with guys like Courtland Sutton to throw the football to, I think the Broncos are the second best team in this division, no question.
Oh, as far as the Broncos concerned, yeah, Debo with Washington. But with I love Washington, what they understand what their quarterback is, and like he needs weapons. Let's build bulk of an offensive line, which they did. They drafted tackle, plus they brought in Tunsil, and they have two Chiefs guys starting on the offensive line. And Wiley was undrafted from the Chiefs.
Yeah, now
and Allegretti, who's won 3 rings with the Chiefs, is a 7th round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, the Commanders have gone from nowhere to in the thick of the conversation, right? I mean, very similar to what the Lions did a year ago, where the Lions got off to a slow start, then they really made some noise in the back half of the season. They came into this year as the proverbial favorite to win the NFC, and they end up getting, you know, upset by the Washington Commanders because Dan Campbell, in typical Dan Campbell fashion, the guy's a gambler, right? And he's going to take chances, and he took way too many in that football game. So the Commanders now become a team that everybody has to pay attention to. And the Broncos have done something similar, not quite to that extent, but the Broncos are somebody that you can't just look at it. This isn't the Brock Osweiler Denver Broncos anymore that you can just chalk it up as a W. They've got a Super Bowl winning head coach. They've got a great young quarterback, and they've got the best defense top to bottom 1 through 11 in the National Football League.
Yeah, text line 913, please blank on the Raiders more. Well, Raiders are still the Raiders. Chiefs have won 17 of the last 19 against the Broncos and the Raiders. They have extreme success against the Raiders. They actually won more playoff games in Allegiant than what the Raiders obviously have.
That's a tough one for them.
I think that also is partially why he wasn't there, but why an interior – because is Norman Lott a run – is he like a run stuffer, Bink? You would know this more than –
Norman Lott, he's really known for his pass rushing ability. He had the highest rush win rate in college football last year.
That's why I think it's interesting, because obviously, like, Walter Nolan would have been a home run for a variety of different reasons, but he was so good in run defense. Going up against Amarian Hampton, going up against Ashton Jeanty, you know, and Najee Harris, and those guys, it'll be interesting to see, because the Chiefs' defense has been so good on the front with stopping the run.
They didn't have a 100-yard rusher last year except for Lamar Jackson. So no running backs got that point, including Saquon in the Super Bowl.
You lose Turk Wharton. I wonder if the run defense is going to take a little step back because of the loss of Turk Wharton in particular, or just maybe another year of Chris Jones in terms of age. If the run defense takes a step back because of the upgrades at those particular positions, or if they are still as consistent as they were last year and still as good as they were last year, that might be a part of what determines how the division goes in terms of those matchups that you guys are talking about, the big ones.
Here's what the Chiefs done against the Broncos. 17-2 in their last 19. 18-3 in the last 22 against the Chargers. Against the Raiders, 13-2 in the last 15. 18-3 in the last 21. Yeah, wake me up. I know the Broncos game. You can't even count that one that happened in Denver, because none of the starters played. And they did win by a field goal in Kansas City. That was scouting, but they did win that game. And I get it. The Broncos have been close with the Chiefs, but we can't forget they won 16 in a row against them before kind of the streak happened. Yeah, the Broncos have won 2 of the last 5, including last year when they won in Denver, but that was not the Chiefs starters playing in that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bad division up until last season, I think, is where we started to get the reality set in of, okay, Bo Nix actually is pretty good, and Jim Harbaugh, we know, is a good coach anyway, so the Chargers are going to be a problem regardless of how good it seems that they are, and then the Raiders, we'll see how they are this year. Because on paper, it's one of, if not the toughest division in football. We haven't seen it in the last 10 years, as you said, Bank, really, regarding the matchups, but, I mean, hey, let's see how it is this year in terms of competitiveness is going to be there, but it looks on paper that it is, we're not going to see them, the Chiefs, just run through the division like they have. It just doesn't seem that way in terms of on paper and what you have seen them do over the last 2 seasons.
But they have, though. That's the thing.
Like, yeah. But going back 20 games, they have. If you look back last year, they played well, but the Raiders are better this year. The Chargers are good. Bo Nix will be in his second year. We'll see how things go from here in terms of the ease at which it is to win the AFC West. Like, I don't think it's going to be easy.
Somebody on the text line has them less than 11.5 wins. Andy Reid has averaged 11.9 since being head coach.
I'm not saying the Chiefs aren't going to win the division. I'm just saying it's not going to be – I don't think it'll be as much of a cakewalk as it has been since Patrick Mahomes became the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to, like, secure the division in week 14, week 15 anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about how talented this division is, and it is more talented than it has been in the Mahomes era. Yeah, Andy Reid is still the best coach in the AFC West.
Correct.
Patrick Mahomes is still the best quarterback in the AFC West. That's it. And whether, you know, folks want to admit it or not, and there are people who do admit it, there's a little bit of a nervous energy that comes with having to line up across from those two. When you're looking at Patrick Mahomes at the quarterback position, you kind of get a little bit dazed and confused by that.
It's a great point, because it's why these teams, why they win these one-score games.
Yes.
Why teams like the Raiders, they found a way to lose at the end of the game at Arrowhead. They find ways to lose when you're playing against the Chiefs, because you know you have to play perfect, because they will take advantage of that. So you are thinking about Mahomes on the other sideline. It is coming to the equation.
Oh, no question about it. The Chiefs are all but they might be more comfortable in a situation where it's a one score game, whether they're trailing or leading, because that is where they are accustomed to being. And so, again, yeah, the league's the division top to bottom is more talented. The Broncos are better. The Raiders are better. The Chargers are better. Put up or shut up.
But somebody's got to prove it. The elites are still the elite. 100%. I think it's the Chiefs. I think it's the Ravens. I think it's the Bills. I'll even throw your Bengals in there if they could play defense. If, Drew.
And if Joe Burrow can stay healthy. Because he hasn't proven he can stay healthy for three consecutive years.
They have a great offense that sat on the couch last year.
If he plays, I understand that.
Great offense.
I understand that. And they drafted defense. They did everything that they've needed to do to this point in the offseason to try to be a little bit better.
They have not drafted well.
Traditionally,
Mims was terrible last year.
He ranked in the middle of the pack as a rookie offensive tackle that played.
He's always hurt.
And then they took a guy out of Texas Tech or Texas A&M who had what? A sack?
He looks good getting off the bus.
He had 4.5 career sacks. Mind you, Micah Parsons had 6.5 in his whole career at Penn State.
Yeah, Texas A&M does run people. I'll give him that. They run Scordon.
That defensive line was nasty last year. Shamar Turner, Nick Scorton, Shamar Stewart.
Yeah, Scordon led the Big Ten at Purdue in sacks before he transferred to A&M, where it all went to hell.
It'll be interesting to see how they transition, but...
Coming up next, though, what's trending? Plus, we'll look back at the Royals. Is it just a two-horse race in this division?